Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
The middle of the night.
Wherever you are.
Around the world. Hey, welcome back. I'm Christian Tiplady in Brighton in the UK, and I'm with Matthew Noble in Thailand, I believe. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Christian. How's it going?
Really good. Really good. It's sunny out there. So thanks for joining me, and we're co-piloting this episode and future episodes. Thanks a million.
Of course.
So for this episode, we asked a range of teachers the following very simple but quite interesting questions, I think. First of all, what's one concept or idea that has been catalytic to your development? So what has really spurred on, souped up, zoomed up your own development as a teacher? And secondly, how has this concept or this idea influenced your teaching, or how will it influence your teaching in the future?
We're going to hear from two sets of teachers. First, a group of CELTA trainees finishing a course in Medellin, Colombia. Secondly, a group of much more experienced teachers from various places in the world. So first of all, this group of CELTA trainees, they do in fact have a range of experience, though most are less experienced. The first one, however, Sergio, has 7 years teaching experience. So we'll hear from Sergio, Santiago, Joe, who's a man, Joe, who's a woman, and finally, Quinn.
The concept of student-centered teaching, I had a bit of a realization during the course as to how to facilitate things for students as opposed to telling them. And I think I will now assess every activity and every presentation technique or thing that I do to see if it's really student-centered or how can it be more student-centered in the future.
When I started teaching, I spoke really fast and used really complicated vocabulary, so people didn't understand. And I find that upgrading my language has been catalytic to my development, because I've noticed I've tried to simplify my language and speak more slowly, and this has influenced my teaching in a way where it is easier to communicate with the students and move the lessons forward.
So a concept that has been a catalytic for my development is a quote from Adrian Underhill from one of his lessons, where he said that mistakes tell the teacher what to do, which informs me that teaching is a dual process, that the teacher is learning and changing and adapting to a student's needs. Ways I can do this in the classroom are to give feedback at the end of the lesson and also to invite students to tell me what they need and what they think they need.
Something I've been thinking about as I have developed as a teacher is the role of the teacher in the classroom and who the students are, why they are learning English, what do they need and how we can provide that. So the role of the teacher in facilitating their learning and what they want to get out of learning English. And we used the needs analysis in our classrooms to find out more about the students, which I found to be really useful to help me think more about them and less about myself as the teacher, but also to, while I'm planning lessons and thinking about the different activities that we're providing for them, how they can be more student-centred and how we can teach useful skills such as reading and listening and writing, as well as using them as tools for learning, that they can actually improve those skills as well. So I think in the future I'd like to practice making my lessons more student-centred and always keeping in mind what the students, what motivates the students and why they're in the classroom.
Well, a concept that's been catalytic for my development as a teacher has been one as simple as a lead-in. Students have a lot competing for their time, and as a teacher, you want them to engage with the lesson. So with a lead-in, you have to actively find a way to engage the students, to draw their interest. It's not enough to have authority to be a teacher in a classroom with a lesson. You want them to be with you all the way. So starting with a lead-in is essential. Get their attention, capture their attention, and then keep that with you throughout the lesson. Constantly be engaging them. Constantly be giving them reasons, you know, to remind themselves why they're there, why they're engaging, why they're learning.
Having worked with these CELTA trainees and listening to them here, I'm really impressed that this great bunch of teachers have a developing personal theory of what might work in their own classrooms. They all have a growing personal relationship, if you like, with their own development. And I'm sure that through observation and reflection, this will continue to take root and bear fruit. Personally, one of the catalytic concepts I've been inspired by is the idea of principled pragmatism. So in the early 2000s, Kumara Varivelu called for a post-method methodology and a principled pragmatism, as opposed to some kind of eclecticism. That's Kumara Varivelu, 2001, toward a post-method pedagogy, and you can find that in the TESOL Quarterly. He also suggests that, and I quote, "Teacher autonomy is so central that it can be seen as defining the heart of post-method pedagogy." That's the same author, 2003, in Beyond Methods, Macro Strategies for Language Teaching. So it's been argued that the learning of learners, and indeed of teachers themselves, can be shaped by teachers as a result of their own self-observation. And that brings us back to how to empower teachers with the knowledge, the desire, and the ability to self-reflect on a range of issues.
Yeah, well, a range of issues is actually just what we'll hear from the four more experienced teachers that I got in touch with. And you mentioned self-observation. This is precisely what Cecilia from Brazil, currently in the UK, will be talking about. And then we'll hear from John, from the US, living in northern Thailand. Camilla, who teaches both English and Czech in Prague. And Rob, who's American, but sent his catalytic concept from somewhere high in the mountains of Kashmir, I believe. And I think as we listen, we'll hear that principled pragmatism talked about by Kumara Varivelu, as well as the teacher's embrace of this autonomy that, when it comes to development, is entirely necessary for teachers to take on. So let's have a listen.
The catalyst moment for me in my practice was when I transitioned to online teaching and I started recording my lessons and watching my lessons. I think that's very powerful for teachers to watch their lessons and to step back for a while and see through an outsider's perspective. Also, that helped me not to take anything for granted, to really listen to my students and not to try to predict anything, let their language, their questions emerge. And I think that was the moment.
I suppose there have been many catalytic concepts that have impacted my teaching, but one of the key concepts that I keep calling back to is creating a positive learning environment. And now often that gets lumped into classroom management, which is understandable, but to me it's so much more than that. It's about materials that compel students to engage with the language and introducing activities that give them an opportunity to do so. And most importantly is it creating a risk-free or limited risk environment to take chances. It's a bit of a balancing act to create a positive learning environment. It has to be one where the teacher is in control of where the class is going, sort of a manager facilitator, but that the learners are not experiencing a level of anxiety which might interfere with them reaching their goals. And then, of course, there's the cultural context that needs to be navigated. A positive learning environment in Southeast Asia or the Middle East are different in many ways. But one aspect that seems to cross cultures is that at the beginning of the course, I'm making it clear that while I'm friendly, I'm not your friend. I'm the teacher who's here to help you help yourself. Ideally, I guess it's the class unit that eventually determines if a classmate is acting outside the parameters of what makes a positive learning environment.
I think it's expected that teachers ask questions, but you don't really learn what questions to ask in the class. And both of these books, I found some ways this can be done in the classroom, and it's quite amazing. So I'd like to talk about that. The basic idea is that there are three main types of questions, and I'm sure you know these. It's all very simple, you know, that's what fascinates me, that I didn't think about this earlier. So the first question would be the yes and no question. So, for example, that's, is it still raining? Yes, it is. No, it isn't. The second type of question is giving a choice. So that's either or. For example, do you want coffee or tea? So you're giving a choice of two options, or you can give a choice of three options. And the third type is the open question. So what is this? Why do you want to do that, for instance? There are many, many ways you can use this in the classroom. We can look at two things, the teacher asking the questions, and then we can look at shifting the weight and have the students ask questions. So this questioning in the English classroom or in the language classroom, yeah, I really recommend it.
One of the most impactful notions I've encountered as a teacher has been extensive reading, and I guess along with it, extensive listening, but people don't really talk as much about extensive listening. Extensive reading is when you have students engage in pleasure reading. It's generally defined as reading in which they understand 98% of the vocabulary, and that's actually a pretty important number. The difference between 92% and 98% when you're talking about comprehension and reading is massive, so it really does need to be 98%. It's pleasure reading for an extended period of time, at least 20 minutes at a stretch, and it's usually self-selected. The students are choosing what they read. This concept was so impactful for me because I and a lot of teachers have this idea that, and a lot of students have the idea that we need to be constantly challenging ourselves, and that the more you're challenging yourself, the more you're learning. And that's absolutely not the case, especially with language when comprehensibility is so important. That was a valuable concept for me to understand.
Don't you just love hearing teachers talk about this stuff? How John's idea describes a process of a basic early concept that's focused on by novice teachers, really concerned about creating a positive atmosphere. But he really describes how that might transform over the years. And once you internalize it, it might really branch out. It means something quite different and maybe quite a lot more sophisticated than it did early on. And the same can be said of Camilla's idea. And it also shows that idea of being quite systematic with things that we might take for granted in the classroom. And how Rob kind of stares down this shadowy elephant in the room, so to speak. This whole world of extensive reading, which one day you might say, wow, I've really been ignoring something important. And perhaps your whole practice is transformed by that thing. And of course, this idea of self-observation, which on some levels requires this kind of estrangement device that video affords. And in many ways goes beyond the idea of a catalytic concept to a catalytic strategy or an entire shift in the way we think about how we reflect. So how to get further beyond the kind of subjective self-perception and the weakness of memory for our development.
Thanks so much to those 9 teachers who joined us from around the world. We really appreciate that. And we'd ask you to ask yourselves perhaps the same 2 questions. First of all, what one concept or idea has been catalytic to your own development? And secondly, to take this into the practice, how has this concept influenced your teaching, or how will it influence your teaching further? And make it concrete. Yeah, keep tuning in to the TD SIG DevelopPod, and like us if you like us, and tell your friends, and follow us for our regular updates.
As we do at the end of our DevelopPods, something fun. This time around, we had a whale of a time pronouncing one person's particularly long name.
Kiyomeravadivalu.
And we're really not sure if that's a good guide, but between the two of us, I don't think we can probably do any better.
I think we can. Here we go. Kumaravadivalu.
No, Kumaravadivalu. Divalu.
Divalu.
Divalu. Maravadivalu.